All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the In the Dome podcast. Okay, I wanted to open up first question. How are we missing Mark Giordano?
I'd say probably. I think the team would be better with Mark Giordano because one of the main thing the team is struggling with is scoring goals, and something he's really good at creating. So I would say yes, but way less. I mean, defensively way less than I would have thought. Don't you agree?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. You miss his offensive ability, but hey, Zadorov apparently is going to fill those shoes now, eh?
Man, like, okay, like, tonight, I'm sorry, guys. Tonight, I'm not sorry. I'm so glad we have a head coach now who has a fucking brain. Because, like, how much better has Zadorov been since Gerald scratched him and worked with him?
Oh, man. Well, if you compare his game pre-scratch to post-scratch, there's still been some blips post-scratch. He's got two goals since then, though. He's been way more physical. I know you're listening to post game stuff. Daryl straight up told the media that that's one of the things he needs him to be, more physical. He's been a lot more physical, has he not? Him and Gabranson are like the new twin towers back there.
It's just been like, man, been very good.
He was getting in the other Kachuk's face tonight, eh? Gabranson. I mean, not Gabranson, both of them.
But dude, I am growing to love these guys. I gotta say,
this is the other thing I also wanted to start with, is how great has Eric Gabranson been? Because I know that we were really hard on him preseason, even though he did stink preseason. But this is one of those situations where, similar to Tanev, maybe not quite as, maybe we'll see where the season ends up. But, you know, when you're looking at analytics from a prior season, that's kind of where you want to project the player, somewhere similar to what he's done, even though players can flip-flop, like Rasmus Anderson is having a resurgence. We're still waiting for Monahan to have his resurgence. But when the Gabranson acquisition was announced, this confused a lot of, I know people that follow analytics at least, confused a lot of fans in terms of, man, this guy's analytics numbers have been terrible. What are we doing? Yet he's, on a lot of nights, he's been our best D-man defensively.
He's having the best season he's had probably in, like, I don't even know if I'm exaggerating because I don't know his career so that extensively, but he's having like the best, he's probably playing the best hockey he's ever played.
This is interesting because we know for a fact this was a Daryl Sutter hire, because Daryl Sutter recruited him in the offseason. We even talked about it. When have you ever heard of a head coach recruiting guys? I'm sure it happens, but you don't really hear about it much. But they did have a connection back to Anaheim. So all these guys that Daryl's brought in, he's played with them before. He obviously knew something about Gabranson and liked, I don't know, he brought, obviously had faith in him. And Gabranson's been great. He's been great. How many games have we played? 15 games? 13 out of 15 games, Gabranson has been played above expectations.
Well above expectations. And I mean, the thing that he's doing what he was brought in to do, because I know if you listen to us, we often rag on Lucic. Like, he's doing all the things Lucic should be doing. Like, he got into a scrap tonight. Man, that guy's a beast.
Oh, he's scary, dude.
Dude, he's so scary.
Is there any Lucic Gabranson fights in the past? I would love to see those two go at it.
Right? Like, I mean, he's kind of doing all the things I wish Lucic would do, you know? Like, he gets into it with Tyler Toffoli and Brendan Gallagher against Montreal, which, by the way, I don't know how Tyler Toffoli doesn't get a penalty or, like, some sort of suspension for, like, almost killing a guy on that.
Well, because if you're playing in Montreal, you don't get calls for it. You only get calls against.
Apparently, that's the case. But, I mean, like, seriously, major props to Gabranson, because I still think this team is, what are we, 8-3-4? I still think this team is probably 8-3-4 if Valimaki's in a spot or if Mike Stone's in a spot. But he has been giving you, he's been very good in his role. He's doing what he's supposed to do. And I can't help but give props to you. How old is he? 36? Like, you can't ask for much more from a guy who's 36 playing that role, executing it pretty well. So,
well, and the dude's he's a fucking monster, man.
Yeah,
hey, we've talked about this after the Dallas series specifically. You go in there, you have monster defensemen, that's all you're up against. Oh more monster defensemen. You know, you start to see why coaches and GMs have a propensity to draft and acquire monster defensemen as long as they can play hockey. Because, my God, dude, fuck, that's hard minutes. If you're going down there and you're battling against those guys, and, man, he's smooth. Gratson's smooth. He's a good skater. You said, he's put up one of his best seasons, but from a guy like for myself, and most fans, we haven't watched him outside of a Flames uniform before. I don't know what the knock was, because this guy looks great.
Yeah, he's been very good. And, I like the guy. It's almost what happened with Lucic. The thing about Lucic, though, is that you kind of expect a little more out of him. But it's kind of like reverse Mike Stone, where it's like, I don't hate the guy. I really like the guy. It's weird. It's like, if you come in and play the way he's been playing and put an honest effort in every single night and get some decent results, and again, for how much I'm into analytics and stuff, I'm a big time old school hockey fan, and I love when guys drop the gloves. And like, Gabranson is like becoming like a secret pet favorite of mine right now, and it's like, I want him to do He's like a kid that I want to see do really well. I mean, he's impressed me enormously.
I would like to see him shoot more. I want to see Rasmus Anderson shoot less and Erica Branson shoot more.
Oh, my God, dude. Okay, we'll get into the game by game because we have three games to break down here. Can Rasmus Anderson never I know he got the Lindholm tip goal tonight, but other than that, can he just not shoot ever? So I mean, it's 3-on-3 in overtime against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Austin Matthews on the ice.
God.
Anderson like comes in and like he was where? He was almost in the at the circle. Like, and okay, what's the one rule in overtime? And this is like a rule on the power play too. When a guy's coming to the box, don't miss the net by a mile so it rings around for the guy to have a breakaway. What does he do? Fucking blasts it into like just oh man, what is he thinking? And Matthews gets a breakaway. Vladar made the save, but holy crap. Anderson, Rasmus, he needs a shot caller. Don't shoot. Just zap him every time he's going to shoot. I've never seen this guy shoot and well, it'd be a smart play.
It's funny because, a couple of seasons ago in the media, they were doing stories about, oh, yeah, the coaching staff wants him to shoot more. I think at the time we all did because he had a few slap shot goals that worked. Now it's just like, dude, him and Noah Hanifin, when they get the puck in the offensive zone,
yeah, it's
you're
dead.
You're just like, this is a dead play. Completely dead. Completely useless. That's why I have a big beef with him on the power play right now. Yeah. What does he do on the power play?
Blast! Blast! He's the new Geo.
He is. And he can't do the drop back because he can't deke on his backhand side for some reason. In order to do the drop back, he has to turn his entire body. He physically
turns around.
Like, dude, you literally never learned to stick handle on your back end ever, ever.
Man, oh man.
My God. So how was you were texting me after Zadorov gets into it a bit today? Then he has the goal. He's growing on you. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to the preseason, we liked him when he roasted Eric Francis and just kind of has an attitude about him. But he scores that goal. Tonight he seemed like shrugged. Like that was hilarious. And he didn't take any shit. Sabran is starting to start shit with him. Sabran gives him a little cross check and Zadorov just like laughs at him. Yeah, he's growing on me.
It's interesting. Hey, you know, we're so used to just Tkachuk being the
only one.
The only guy starting shit.
Yeah.
But then you have Zadorov. He's a shit starter. Totally. Yeah, he's a bit of a pest. Gabranson is just like, don't fuck with Gabranson. Who was the guy that fought him? Sabrin?
Buddy looks like, no, it was Sanford, I think.
Sanford.
Buddy looks like a cop who is like,
yeah, he does.
You see downtown, you're like, oh shit, I am not getting up to trouble tonight.
Yeah. So, and was it, you said Sanford?
Yeah, Sanford. Don't know his first name.
Sanford, you're lucky that Brady Tkachuk, what the hell was he doing? Interferes for the first, few seconds of your fight, allows you to get a few shots in. Otherwise, you got pumped, buddy. What was Matthew Tkachuk's brother doing? Did you see that?
Backlund's got like him strung up like a puppet.
Yeah, but when Branson and what's his face were fighting, you see Brady jump in at the very beginning.
Brady, bad idea.
Anyways.
Well, so, I mean, Gabranson beat the piss out of Cassian last year, so I think we all have a soft spot in our heart for him, too.
Yeah, the new turtle, eh? That's when Zach Cassian was turtling.
And listen, I don't give Brad Treliving credit for this. I give Daryl Sutter credit for this, just so we're clear, for Gabranson being not terrible.
So let's before we get in micro, let's talk about the macro. This is zoom out because... Thank God that they beat the beatable team tonight and did it in, even convincing. Though like that was a B game. Like this is a terminology that Sutter is starting to, communicate with the media. And it's okay. You either bring your A game or your B game. And if it's your B game, it better be pretty good. Yeah. And then if you don't bring your B game, you're sitting in the press box, Tyler Pitlick, most likely. But that was a B game from the team, and they still beat a team they should have beat pretty swiftly. So if that doesn't happen, because I mean, you look at the game against Montreal, that was triggering, right? A lot of fans are just like, fuck, man. And the only reason why is because we don't, the identity is not set yet with this team, with this new Daryl Sutter team. There's way too much PTSD. As soon as we see a glimpse of just the absolute mediocrity that we've seen from pretty much, you know, the same team, there's a lot of new faces, but from the same core and whatnot, as soon as you see a glimpse of it in this regular season, it's very triggering because it just brings up all those old frustrations and you're just like, fuck, are we bad again? And then you could play Toronto. You play a pretty good game in Toronto, but the biggest thing, and I know this is true for me and you, is, okay, if Toronto's a measuring stick and they're starting to play good hockey, so I think you can measure them. They're probably one of the better teams in the league. Skill, speed, all that. And you're having a really hard time keeping up with them. That's not encouraging because you always want to be, you know, near the top. You want your team not only to be a playoff team, you want to be able, want them to be able to contend. So when you try and measure up to a team like Toronto and you fall pretty short, all things considering, I mean, the outcome was okay. You maybe could have got a point, but like Daryl said, if your PP could have locked it up. But if you're looking at the game breakdown, it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of you and I were going on this. It's just like, fuck, man. We're not even close to Toronto. Why hasn't this GM done something to make this team better? So you had the first game against Montreal, which is just triggering. And then the second one, you're like trying to match up with Toronto. And now you're realizing, fuck, what has Brad Friedling done to make this team better? And it was, like I said, it was a good thing. We beat the beatable team tonight in Ottawa because, fuck, things might have gone off the rails there. Man.
It would have been a meltdown. Like, I was even starting to get into it. And I'm really trying this season. And I've even stated it, right? Like, this is going to be hopefully a less up and down season. And again, like, for you've picked up 3 points in the last three games, at least, right? Things are still relatively stable in terms of your place in the standings. And all things considered, like, how many terrible games have you played? Those last two games you played on the road against Montreal, I would say the Montreal game is probably the worst game, but all things considered, you're at least picking up some points and you won tonight. Thank God. And you won tonight in convincing fashion and you scored 4 goals tonight, because that's the thing to me that, like, I still think is a valid concern, where not that, oh, is this team, do we suck again? But this team is still going to have such a hard time scoring goals. Why hasn't Brad Schilling brought in somebody who can score some goals?
Well, and as soon as anytime the offense dries up, that's what we're going to be crying for.
Totally. Like, that's because that's what we need, right? And I mean, that's something Daryl's been talking to us since day one. And it kind of caught us off guard when he's saying, like, we don't have high end talent, period. We don't have it. So he was talking post game Montreal game. So you let in 3 goals and you're an offensively challenged team. It's going to be really tough for you to win games. So,
yeah. The other thing he's saying is scoring 3 goals a night is not sustainable with this group.
Well, yeah. And he was even, and something really interesting I thought that he pointed out that, I know Kent was kind of tweeting about, the Flames kind of, stall in terms of generating chances in transition. Dale kind of pointed this out in his I think it was post game against Montreal or Toronto. I can't remember. Because again, like, he's so full of good information. Here's what this podcast could become. We're just going to like compile Daryl Sutter weekly clips plan for you guys, and we won't say anything. His analysis is usually spot on. So what Daryl was talking about, the top line, you know, they struggled in those two games. He was saying, yeah, they're not getting the rush chances they were getting early on this season. That's pretty normal. As the season goes on, those chances are harder to generate, and you're going to have to get more zone time. You're going to have to get more garbage goals. You're going to have to work the puck in the O zone more, and that's what they're going to have to do to succeed. So, yeah, that's what we're going to need to start seeing. And when that, as we've seen, when the top, as the top line kind of goes, unless Mangiapane's scoring, this team hasn't had a lot of secondary scoring. They've had depth scoring. Zadorov, Lucic, they've been scoring. But in terms of secondary scoring, you're still waiting on Coleman. Monahan is taking his sweet time, even though he's picked up a few points, but scoring, it is what we've kind of been saying since the beginning of the season. The Flames are going to be a good 5-on-5 team. They are likely going to lose a lot of games like we saw against Toronto and Montreal simply because they don't have enough firepower.
Yeah, and this is why we keep on harping on the power play. Daryl Sutter is now doing the same. And it's like, I agree. The Montreal game is your worst game of the season. But if you look at Montreal and Toronto, those are the only two games all season long we've been beaten 5-on-5. That's it. So if you're 15 games in and you've only lost 2 5-on-5 games, mm-hmm. To keep things all in perspective, still this team has had a pretty good season through 15.
Totally. And again, like the other thing is too, is like there's not that there's a baseline, but we are kind of tethered. Like we've at the least, like I said, not up and down. We've been picking up loser points. You're not digging yourself into a hole where it's going to be like, holy shit, we got to go 10-0 here. We got to win 7 games in a row.
Like every other fucking season we've been.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, if the Flames hadn't won that historical 10 games in a row, they wouldn't have even made the playoffs. So it's going to be a grind, but it's a grind that in which we're picking up points at the very least.
Well, and the guy at the helm, Daryl Sutter, is going to have these guys prepared for every single game down the stretch, right? I mean, not down the stretch, for the rest of the season, right? The other thing he's saying, because somebody asked him, I can't remember what the question was, but he said, well, no, this is not a top-tier team in this NHL.
Yeah, the question was something like, shouldn't you beat Montreal? And he's like, what are you talking about? We missed the playoffs last year.
Yeah, exactly. Shouldn't you beat Montreal, one of the weaker teams in the league? No, we are one of the weaker teams in the league, right? It's like, we didn't make the playoffs last year. We battled to make the playoffs. And I guess this kind of comes back to us starting the season, you know, lowering our expectations. What do you truly expect for this team? You do expect them to make the playoffs, but you don't expect them to be a shoe-in. So like you're saying, to get off to a good start, man, holy shit, is so important. And yeah. It's actually really refreshing and nice not to have to be like, okay, well, I guess if we go on a, 8-2-2 stretch here, we could climb back up into the playoff picture, right? Nice to be at the top to start the season.
But did the Oilers win again tonight? Holy shit, they did.
Yeah. It's funny if you look at they don't have a problem scoring 4 or 5 goals tonight. And
or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or like, holy crap, dude.
All their wins are like 6-4, 6-5, 5-4, 5-3.
It's just crazy. They scored 59 goals this year, are 11-3-0. But hey, we've played one more game and are only 2 points back. So
we're keeping pace with the Coilers.
We are keeping pace. That's all we need to do. Because no matter what this team does in the regular season, even though, like Daryl said, we weren't a playoff team last year, nothing is going to matter if they suck in the playoffs. So,
yeah, he's playing the long game. He's playing the Stanley Cup game.
That's all we got to think about. Because, like, even if this team does make the playoffs, if they lose in the first round again, it's a complete failure. So,
absolutely is. So, the Montreal game, let's go there. I think to me, they look tired. But I do think Montreal, you got to give them props. They played a good game. They played our game against us. They beat us at our own game. And I don't know. These last 3 games there hasn't been that, many great individual performances outside of Shillington last game in Toronto. But it is what it is. Daryl comes in, changes up the lineup. You know, the reasoning why he said it is guys are getting stale. And another thing that he mentioned is he gives the players, I don't know if he does it for the whole team or not, defense included, but he gives the players goals for little mini stretches. This is what he said in one of his post games, whether it's a 3-game stretch or a 4 or 5 for this road trip, it's probably a 7-game stretch. He gives each individual their own goals. So, I mean,
you compare this to Jeff Ward. No, just got to have fun. Play some music and practice. Hey, hate to lose. Trifecta.
Just get burned up. Just get real burned up after them losses.
So that's his reasoning for changing up the lines, is that certain individuals aren't reaching their goals. I don't know. The Coleman, Mangiapane, Monahan line has not yet really done much for me. And then, you know, you dilute the third line with Dubé, Backlund, Pitlick. Pitlick sits in the in the press conference tonight, in the press box tonight. What have been your thoughts on the line changes?
Well, I think they are needed for this team to take a step forward. I think we're talking about the Monahan. We've been talking about the Monahan problem a lot.
You need Monahan going and have for the team to have success.
Again, like we've scoring. If your team is going to be successful, you need your best goal scorer or your historically best goal scorer to be scoring goals and to not be playing on the fourth line. So I think that was the right move to put Monahan there. I think it has worked okay. Like again, you know what you're getting. As much as I bitch about Coleman not scoring, you know what you're getting from him.
Fuck, he hasn't done much, eh?
He hasn't done a lot, but you know you're gonna get when he's on the ice 5-on-5. You're probably gonna win the 5-on-5 battle, and he's gonna be tilting the ice in the opposite direction.
I want more.
I do. I want more too. Like we were talking about this. Like look at James Neal. James Neal has 4 points. Blake Coleman has 5.
Fuck.
Kind of need a little bit more there, bud. Need a little bit more.
Just a bit more there, Blake.
You need to start scoring some goals, Blakey, old boy. So
is they even have him on PB2 though?
No, that annoys me. Like Lucic, like come on, like that's got to end, right? Like, come on. Like I know they love their big net front guy, but you got to get Coleman out there on power play too.
If you love big nets so much, put Gabranson in front of the net.
Right? Like, I mean, even Dubé is a great trigger man. And I think he's been great. I don't know. You got to get Coleman on that second unit. This is ridiculous.
Dubé's got to get scoring too, man.
Like, yeah, he's got to pick it up too. There's kind of three guys who need to pick up the slack offensively. Coleman, Monahan, Dubé. But I don't know. Backlund too. I think it's a long-term. It has to work in the long term if this team is going to be successful, because your center depth can't be Lindholm, Backlund, Dubé, Monahan. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I think it's kind of now or never for Monahan though, if he's going to be playing with those two guys. So, and like, honestly, like I thought he was fine tonight in Montreal. I don't know. It's a bit of an adjustment probably to play with two guys who are actually good instead of Lewis and Richardson.
He's just starting to get used to playing with Lucic and Lewis. Eh?
Well, you kind of see it on the power play too. Like Johnny will feed him. I was talking about this last time. It's like he doesn't expect to get a pass because he's like, oh yeah, I'm playing with good players who can get me the puck.
Or how about that image of him in overtime against the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Oh my God.
Wide open net. The old Sean Monahan would have shot that from the red line and scored.
Buddy is a shell.
Shell. How does he get it? Is it just confidence, you think? Or he just...
Dude, I don't even know. Like, does he look confident? Certainly doesn't.
No, certainly doesn't.
But he also doesn't look able.
No. You know?
Like, you kind of saw it. Like, it was kind of funny tonight in the Ottawa game. Getting off track already, but he shoots that puck. And he thinks it's his goal. And he's like, you can see him just, like, go hug Coleman. And it's like, it's Monge's goal. Like, you didn't score that, Sean. I don't know. It's getting difficult to figure out what's happening with Monahan because, man, like, what, 14 games, 15 games?
Yep. Well, you got to give him more time, I think, because he is showing some signs. I mean, that goal tonight, even though he doesn't get credit, for all intents and purposes, I mean,
That's his goal.
He shoots the puck. I think he even texted you. Wow. Because, I mean, what we've been seeing with Monahan the past two weeks, the guy gets the puck in the slot. Typically, we're used to seeing Monahan just push the button on a stick and it goes top shelf. The guy's not even fucking shooting it.
Yeah.
So tonight he gets it in the high slot, makes it, he made actually a fucking nice move to get it, get to the dangerous area, lets it go, goes in. I don't know. I think you need to give him a little bit more time. I don't think I'm totally writing him off yet. I mean, the other change is Mangiapane, because we've been saying he's got to get more minutes. Now, we listened to the post game with Darryl against the Senators, and he has a very interesting take on Mangiapane's minutes and Winger's minutes as a whole. Have a listen.
Is part of the reason you put Mangiapane on that second line because you want to give him some more ice time? Or are you content with him being around 14, 15 minutes?
That's how they. That's with schedule. That's what those wingers should be at. You know, if you can get that, you start pushing into that 17-minute with wingers, that are, and a lot of even strength minutes. And you're, if you do it through the league, you're running up against it again. So, I just think the way our, you know, it's more the centermen. Those guys play. Like Lindy and Michael kill a lot of penalties, and they're both on the power play, so it affects how the wingers are put back together again, and we've tried to run lines as much as we can with the schedule. So I don't even really look at the minutes part of it. I just look at more when they're together and trying to get the not just the production, but the performance to max it out for him.
Okay, I'll be honest. I don't really follow exactly what he's saying, but the point of putting that in there is whatever his method is, and we've said this a few times, he has a method to whatever madness is going on with the lineups, with the line changes, this and that. There's some, everything he does is very calculated with a very clear and direct purpose that sometimes only he understands. And this is another prime example of, did you follow that? I don't really get it. The wingers and the minutes and the this and the that compared to the centers. I mean, I get it if you're, you know, your prime penalty killers are Michael Backlund and Elias Lindholm. When they go back to their lines, yeah, okay, sure, it's hard, tough to get the lines back together right off the hop. But I don't know. He just seems to understand exactly what he's doing.
Well, you've said this before. It's like a guy who's won and won twice knows certain things in the equation and in the variable to winning.
Is it safe to say he's won three times, though?
Yes, it is.
For all intents and purposes, won the cup three times.
I mean, at Iggy's Hall of Fame thing this week, he was like, yeah, I was in. That's totally in. He's like, it didn't count, but it was in. But Daryl Sutter has, like, you look back at those LA Kings teams and how he utilized center icemen, like, he's always utilized center iceman, like just pushed, like the crux of Daryl Sutter's team have been down the middle. So I don't know if I understand it from a strategic point of view, but I'm just looking at the distribution of winger ice time on the Flames compared to across the league. And yeah, it's certainly a little bit diminished. You even look at Johnny and Kachuk's average ice time during the game. And yeah, it's a lot lower than you might expect for guys who are playing on the top line. Like, I don't even think they're in the top 50 in the league. So he obviously has some sort of method there. I'm not sure if he's just trying to, like, with a guy like Manj, he likes to roll lines too. So he likes to squeeze the juice out of every single player on every single shift, I'm sure. So I don't know if that's a part of it. But he seems to know he seems to have a reason for it. So like,
Yeah, regardless, if you break it down, whatever he's doing 5-on-5 is working.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're one of the best 5-on-5 teams in the league. And again, Mangiapane has 10 goals almost. He has 9 goals. So we can sit here and bitch and moan about, oh, if you just play him 40 minutes a night, he's going to score more.
If you go back to Montreal and you go back to San Jose and you say, oh, if Mangiapane, maybe he gets one more goal that you need. But really, those games you lost because your power play couldn't do anything.
Yeah, and because the top line couldn't score, and there was no secondary scoring,
which is what he's also saying.
Other than Mangiapane,
what did you think of this Montreal game? Markstrom starts, which pissed me off because you lose, and you're already kind of thinking, why is Markstrom starting again? And then you lose, so then you say, oh fuck. Then he goes to Villar back to back.
yeah, it pissed me off until Dan started back to back, and I was like, fucking brilliant.
Right? Totally redeem yourself.
Yeah, I'm such a loser. Like, I'm like, what is he doing? He's gonna kill Markstrom. And then he starts Vladar back to back. And I was like, wow, that was actually really smart.
You know, Daryl, just when I think you couldn't go out and make a worse mistake with your goaltenders, you go and do something like this, and you totally redeem yourself.
And I mean, the thing I liked about it too, sorry, I just grabbed my mic. The thing I liked about it too is that Daryl was talking about the reasoning for it, not even in the context of giving Markstrom a break, but also
he's managing the road trip.
Yeah, and he's managing Dan too. Like he said, Vladar needs to learn how to play back-to-back games. That's really important. So he's also working with these guys on an individual level. He's not just playing Dan Vladar because Markstrom needs a rest. He's playing Dan Vladar because he's working with Dan Vladar.
Yeah, he did say post-game that going into the road trip, the plan was if you can start with Marky, get him a game off the bat, then you can go back-to-back with Vladar. So he knew what he was doing before even leaving Calgary. He also said, I mean, and this is, look, you have four games. Those last four games, they played in six nights.
Travel, time change, all that shit.
So,
and I mean, Toronto is really good. And Montreal doesn't play a soft brand of hockey. So those are two hard games.
Yeah. One of the things that Daryl did say, I've never heard anybody else say this before, is that when you play Montreal and Toronto, both teams on a road trip, it's tough. It's not easy going into Montreal and into Toronto, let alone doing it on back-to-back nights. He says it's tough to do. But if you're looking at just the way the schedule has been a grind so far, I mean, this is where we have to check ourselves. And look, you and I fall into it just as bad as anybody else does.
Me especially.
Like I said, If we released our text messages, right, people would be like, you guys are fucked. Hey, we're like the filters, right? We filter everything out between each other, but we have carte blanche to say whatever the hell we want in game to each other because no one else is going to see it and see how ridiculous it sounds.
Now, the problem is sometimes it takes social media and it's a bad situation, but.
Yeah, sometimes. I guess you. I wasn't there to filter you the other day.
You certainly weren't, and I went a bit, way off.
Yeah. All right. Well, so the Montreal game. Let's go through the game report. 26-28 were the shots. You got outshot by two. This is my big thing. Calgary goes 0-for-1 on the power play. Montreal goes 2-for-5 on the power play. Daryl even mentioned it after the game. Like I said, hey, the reason why we talk about Daryl so much is because he fucking knows what he's doing. The reason why we talked about Ward so much is because he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. Right? This podcast will balance itself out. I think that's what this is. It's balancing itself out.
Exactly.
But, you know, he got asked about the officiating because the officiating was fucking terrible.
Dude, it was unbelievable. It was one of those games where it's just like, how can this be a professional, like, on, it was so bad. I don't think we're exaggerating when people are like, don't blame the refs. Like, that was brutal. Oh, my Lord.
One power play to their five was what, like, were we off the handle? Like, I don't understand if you're calling an even game. Well, the one thing Daryl said after the game is he got asked about it. Was the officiating bad or whatever? And he says, well, the way I look at it is Montreal is one of the most penalized team with minor penalties in the league. You'd expect them to get more than one penalty. But it was bad. And this this is like a week after you have the back-to-back overtime trips not called. Mm-hmm. It's starting to – it's fucking frustrating.
It's really frustrating when you're losing like – one goal games, which this pretty much was, like you've lost 3-1 goal games because of just like shit officiating. Like, sure, you can score, but like, even if you win one of those games because of competent officiating, that's huge. And I like the Flames didn't play a very good game, but at the same time, they spent 10 minutes killing penalties, half half of a period killing penalties. That's tough.
And you're in the power play for two.
Hey, folks, we'll get back to the show in a moment. Just a quick word from our sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. The NHL season is underway. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unreal offer. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state or country yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed, as everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use the promo code THPN, throw down $1 on any NHL game, and win $100 in free bets. Either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. You gotta be 21 years or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. There's a minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When it's just like you said, there's two or three times there's a scrum after the whistle, and we're the only fucking penalty.
How do you like Tyler Toffoli? Like, Gabranton's standing there, and I mean, sure, he hit Gallagher while Gallagher's in the crease, right?
Didn't Gabranton get the only penalty?
Gabranton, I think they both got penalties, but I don't think Toffoli got one for the cross check. Buddy, like, full on cross check boards Gabranton, like, after the whistle had blown. Somehow Gabranton gets a penalty for retaliating or whatever the shit. I don't know how on earth Toffoli doesn't get the only penalty there and doesn't get a call from the league. How do you get away with a boarding? Like, he literally boarded him with a cross check from behind after the whistle.
Apparently that's the big crackdown this year, though. Cross checks to the back.
Right. Yeah.
They're really cracking down on it. Unless you're
Gabranson.
Unless you're in Montreal. Big guy. That did piss me off, but
that's some bullshit.
I'm not going to say they lost the game because of it, but it was just to add to the frustration of the game.
Yeah. They lost the game because they played a pretty sloppy game and just couldn't generate enough. But when that shit happens in a close game, it's just infuriating.
Pretty evenly matched. Scoring chances 18-16 for Calgary. The high danger chances were 7-6 for Montreal, and Montreal wins the expected goals for 44% to Calgary's 46. Sean Monahan has the highest game score.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I don't know if it was because he was just playing with the old 88, who was really good. I thought he was probably the best Flames player and scored that immaculate goal.
Fuck, that was nice, eh?
But, I mean, like, props to Monahan. Like, those are probably his two of, I don't know about the Toronto game, but definitely today in the Montreal game, probably two of his better games. And, yeah, I thought he was fine in that game. That line looked perfectly serviceable and had some potential in that game. So
Backlund gets a bit of a lucky one, right? Tips it in.
Sure, the old Lewis tip, eh?
Hey! So that's was it the new third line, or that was a bit of a mix?
I think it was just a jumble, but
a little jumble. And then, but yeah, Sherratt ties it, and then Mangiapane, we go up. I think we went up 2-1.
What are those shit goals too? Like, it's like ploinks in the air 400 feet and drops into the net. Oh my god.
Let's just talk about that Mangiapane goal for a second.
Yeah.
So that's a pass from Coleman? Who passed that?
Monahan.
Fuck.
You could tell because it's in his feet and not on his tape.
Right. That was fucking money, dude. So I was trying to think, have I ever done that? Have I ever deked somebody on my knee before? No. I've gone down one knee, take a one-timer. I never deked out a goalie, went backhand shelf on one knee. Hey, Brett Chesley.
Bitch.
I did tag Brett Chesley.
Good. Did he respond this time? Probably not.
He did. He's like, oh, wow, backhand goal. Blah, blah, blah. Still not a top six forward. It's a good goal, though.
What a loser. Dude, that's like, man, that all the elements that went into that, okay, gets in his feet, kicks it to his, gets it to his blade, down on one knee, roof backhand. Like, oh, boy.
That was fucking delicious.
That was phenomenal.
So post game, Daryl says you try to set the goals. We talked about that. I don't know. That was a tough loss. Then you play Toronto. You get, give us the game score for Toronto. I don't have it.
Well, I missed pretty much the entirety of the game. I watched it afterwards, but I caught the third in overtime live for the Leafs. But the Leafs one to me was like a game, even though they didn't play very well. And like, I thought Toronto kind of like dominated. That's one for me where I can like be okay with that. Okay. It's a close game.
Back-to-back nights
against the Leafs. Like the Leafs get 55 shot attempts, which is uncharacteristic of the Flames to allow that many, but the Flames still get 49. So pretty close possession wise. Scoring chances, 33-26. Again, that's a pretty high volume for the Flames to have, right? And yep. I mean,
so Toronto at 33?
Yeah. Then, I mean, the Flames even win the high danger chance battle at even strength when all was said and done, 13-11. Toronto edges them in the expected goals four, so they had more of the top-notch, super high-quality chances at 5-on-5. But, like, I don't really have a problem with that game from the Flames in a huge way. Obviously, it's really frustrating. But, I mean, to keep – I don't know what your thoughts – to keep a game – it sucks that they blow it, I think, is what was frustrating. Like, you got the goddamn lead. You could have kind of gotten away with one there, and you blew it. That's what I think is frustrating.
Yeah. You did get the point. I mean, it's funny, like, Vladar comes in, the backup. We seem to just use up all – we store up any and all good juju throughout the season, and we just blow it all in one night against Toronto. So whenever we play Toronto in Toronto, our backup almost gets a shutout, and some – we either squeak out a point or we squeak out a win. Right?
And that's some stupid play, either if it's Matthew Tkachuk falling flat on his face – with an empty net in hand, so they tie it and then lose in overtime, or
fuck,
whatever the hell that overtime was by multiple players, specifically Sean Monahan or Rasmus Anderson. Always seems to be some spectacular error that leads to the overtime loss. Holy shit.
But Vladar was fucking money.
He was so good.
And he was good again tonight in Ottawa.
Like, I said, I didn't see any of it live except the third in overtime, but dude, Rob's the best goal scorer in the fucking league on a breakaway in overtime.
He's been solid. So you missed this live. This was an absolute delight. The Shillington goal.
Oh, my Lord. I'm driving home and you're just like, holy fuck.
So what? This is the third period? Yeah, third period. Late in the game is 0-0. It's still a pretty good game for 0-0. Like, it was back and forth. There's a lot going on. It wasn't boring. And then you can see the play develop. Shillington gets it in his own end. And you can tell, it was like McDavid the other night. He's like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to go. I'm going to go through all these four guys. You can tell Shillington's like, I'm going. Like, this is it. He gives it to Johnny, and he just gets on his horse. And he burns through everybody like, hey, if this is onside, like, he's getting a breakaway. And then he gets the breakaway. He's going full tilt. They have him at 40 clicks. Look, the only time I've ever seen anybody have their speed tracked on Sportsnet is Connor McZitface. And I don't know how fast he goes, but there's no way he's going faster than Shillington is. And how does Shillington make that fucking play? The pass was kind of in his feet. He gets it up real quick. For him to deke and finish the way he did at that speed, watching that live, because I sent it to you and you're like, holy fuck, that was nice. But you watch that live and you're just like, you're amped up because it's 0-0 and it's just the tension.
It's in Toronto. And
in Toronto, and then Shillington pulls out something like that. That was fucking – that was better than the Matthew Tkachuk goal for me. That was probably the goal of the season.
Oh, totally, and better than the Mangiapane goal too. Just an – and like the thing that just – I'm just very impressed with Shillington. I know we'll talk about the turnover in a minute, but it's just this kid's confidence, right? Like, because here's a guy who's been through the ringer and treated like shit from this organization, has a great preseason. The dopey GM has the audacity to say, yeah, he's still got a lot of work to do. Man, oh, man, not up to snuff. Shit like that. Kind of just been put on the shelf for the last 3-4 years. And, like, it's just every time he has the puck on his stick, dude has so much confidence. It's really impressive.
Seriously, though, I think it's a good point. Like, him in the offseason, he must have just been like, fuck it.
I totally think that's what happened.
He's just like, I'm going to, and maybe like he kind of plays the way McDavid does, right? He's like, I'm going full tilt here.
Well, like, he kind of plays like that reckless. It's like, I'm kind of worried he's going to get buried and get hurt or something. He just plays all out.
That's the way he plays, full tilt. So he's pushing play. He's pushing the speed of this team when he's on the ice. No one's breaking it out or moving it up the ice as fast as he is. But he does have the turnover. That was a bad turnover. Leads to the goal. And typically, when he still is doing the one or two turnovers a game. He's outplaying his turnovers. Like if you want to take his game at whole, if you want to take the turnover in a vacuum, but if you look at his game as a whole, I mean, factor in his one turnover, he's outplaying his turnover with what he's contributing the rest of the game, hands down. It sucks that the turnover burns you. And, you know, I like Darryl's response because obviously he gets asked about 20 times after the game. And he says, well, I mean, he's aware of it. Obviously we've talked about it. But one thing, this is the second time somebody asked him about it. He's, you know, how these reporters are, right? So the second time someone asked him, well, what about was that a big mistake? Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, I don't think it was a big mistake. It was a 1-1 game. It was a heck of a hockey game. It was a turnover. Like, big, big deal. It was a good, great game. He played great. So Darryl kind of downplayed it, which is interesting to see. I mean, fuck, she looked like he had a great game despite the one turnover.
Dude, he's had a great game, and he's having a great season. Dude has 10 points in 14 games.
I was calling for him in overtime. And hey, he got overtime. And the only time this team generated anything in that overtime was because Oliver Shillington was on the ice.
Well, again, you see Rasmus Anderson, like we were talking about previously. What are you doing, dude? Like, you cannot miss that shot like that, which led to the Austin Matthews breakaway. Like, he's in deep. There's nobody behind him. And he just fires it 40 feet over the net and it rims around right to Matthews. Like, that play almost made me shit my pants.
And was it him and Monahan on the ice together?
Yes, I believe Monahan was there.
You can't have
and then
two liabilities, potential speed liabilities like that on the ice together.
And then, yeah, like Shillington was on the ice the next shift with Monahan, where, like, okay, Monahan has the most open net I've ever seen in my entire life. I could have probably scored on that open net. Like, does he have – somebody was asking me afterwards, like, honest question, does, like, Monahan have, like, is he, like, farsighted? Does he need glasses? Like, what the shit was that? What was he doing? What was he? Did he not see what was going on? Was he? I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, who knows? He might have not. He might not even know it was an empty net. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I just didn't see. And yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean.
Man, that was rough. And then, of course, Matthews buries it. So.
Man,
I had an issue. That was that for the dart? They got burnt?
Yeah, the five hole.
Yeah, was that Zadorov 1-1?
I don't believe it was. I think Shillington was on the ice, wasn't he?
Wasn't
Shillington. Oh, no, you know, it was a switch up. I think it was Rasmus and Johnny both got fucked up. Yeah,
it was Rass. Yeah, it was Rass. Dude, you can't. There's no gap.
You can't do that, right? And, Rasmus is doing that.
This is the new best goal scorer on the planet. The current best goal scorer on the planet, and you're going to give him 8 feet of gap, you're going to get scored on every fucking time. So, yeah, sure, they get mixed up, him and Johnny, but still, man, like, fuck, be aware. You got Austin Matthews. that's where the breakdown occurred. I don't know. What did you think of Oliver Shillington's turnover / goal, how he just did they wipe each other out? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's 1-1 game. You don't lose that game because of Oliver Shillington is the bottom line.
No, the Leafs are going to tie it up regardless, right?
Yeah. And I thought he, other than Vladar, and I thought Johnny had a pretty good game too, other than his kind of screw up in overtime. But I mean, is Shillington not the best player on the Flames ice other than Vladar against the Leafs? Probably not. So
he's been good. He's got 10 points in how many games?
You can't, it's like, you can't really fault him for that. So
the best way that Daryl put it, I agree, is that that play doesn't lose the game. The PP lost the game.
Yeah, perfectly put.
Daryl says their power play could have sealed the deal for us, and it didn't. I think he's really starting to stress the power play. He even talked about it tonight after the fact, how they did score on the power play tonight. So this is good because it needs to be better. I mean, sure, it's been okay. It's been good, I guess, but it needs to be great. It needs to be semi-great, and you need to start winning games on the power play. You saw it tonight, right? You're up 2-0 against the Senators. The Senators are getting some chances, right? You don't want it to go 2-1 on the road in their building. You get a power play. How many times do we say, okay, they have a chance to fucking, you know, put at least one nail in the coffin here? And they do. And now it's a 3-0 game. Way different game.
Well, and when you're a team that struggles to score 5-on-5 and has struggles finishing. And one thing Daryl did say about, you know, power play success is also going to lead to 5-on-5 success, particularly he was talking about the big boys top line. Because like I was saying earlier, he's saying how they have to start generating more off of zone time and high to low and from the circles and behind the net. And he was just saying like power play success and executing well on a power play gives you reps doing that. So success on the power play is going to lead to success 5-on-5 offensively for these guys, which we, as we've seen, when they score more than 3 goals, they're winning pretty much every single game. When they score less, they don't really have a big chance to win. So stressing offense, especially from the top line.
Yep. Anything else from the Toronto game you want to touch on before we move to Ottawa?
No, just that, man, when they play those original 6 teams, those jerseys just look so goddamn good. Holy shit balls.
Sure do. All right. Ottawa, Pitlick goes out. Dewar comes in. After the game, Doug is asked about it. Oh, what's wrong with Pitlick? Is he injured? Not that I know of. Then another reporter asked him, does he have a lower body injury? Not that I'm aware of. So Pitlick is a healthy scratch. Dewar comes in. What are your thoughts on that before we jump into the game?
Well, I don't know, because I've liked Pitlick's game just fine. I like Dewar. Like, he's fast and big and young, and I'm not against that. I just thought, like, if you're going to be taking somebody out, I much rather would have taken out 78-year-old Lewis or Richardson, or, like, even – I know Lucic has been scoring, but I don't know. I don't see the upside of taking Pitlick out because I think he's been okay. But hey, we won. And
other than the fact of he's going through the grinder now, right? Zadorov goes through the grinder.
Yeah, like sure, he's been fine. Could he be a hell of a lot better? Yeah.
Yeah. Could you ask more out of him? Sure could.
You'd ask him to score a goal once in a while.
Would you like more out of him?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd like some fucking goals. He doesn't have a goal yet, does he?
No.
Yeah.
Brad's big offseason acquisition didn't have a goal yet. But yeah, I thought Dewar was fine. And again, like at this point, it's like Daryl at least knows what he's doing with his forward combinations. So I know everybody was looking at the bottom 6 tonight going like, oh, gross. And they were fine. I didn't like Richardson's game very much, but they were fine. So
Dewar had a one great play where he sets up Lucic.
Yeah, right in the slot.
That was money because he burnt down the wing.
Daryl likes guys like that because he's big. He can skate. That's what Daryl likes. And he gets in on pucks fast. And that's what you saw him do there.
That was a nice greasy play. If only Lucic didn't have stone hands and, you know, so the other personnel debate here is Valimaki sits out again. I'm starting to see it on Twitter. Some people are calling for Valimaki to come back in the lineup, getting their chance. There was an article that Mike Gould was sharing on Twitter that Valimaki, it had to be translated.
Translated
over from Finnish, but he's pissed. Valimaki's pissed off right now that he's watching every game from the press box. So I'm not sure. Where do you think things are at? I mean, is this a good thing? Is it a potentially bad thing? How long do you sit this guy out?
Well, under normal circumstances, if they weren't playing, like, I don't know how you take Zadorov. Like, I don't know. maybe it's a good thing that some of these guys are pissed off, right? Like, you see that with Zadorov. Like you said, he's pissed that he's sitting. Comes back, has played pretty well since.
Look at Shillington.
Yeah.
If you want to know how to make the lineup, this guy fucking did it. No one even – he wasn't supposed to make the lineup. Yet he – every night he plays in such a way where it's just like, you can't take him out. You force the coach's hand. He has to leave you in. When Valimaki gets in their shot, Zadorov's starting to do that. Is he not? The guy's got 2 goals in 3 games now? Or what is it? How many?
Buddy rushed up ice, zoned his own, and sniped one today.
He's been throwing the body around. He's getting physical. He's getting testy. It's going to be hard to, you know, Daryl already has a propensity for larger D-men. He's making a big case to leave him in the lineup currently. Gabranta's not going anywhere. When does Valimaki get in?
Well, you look at the two pairings today. Shillington Tanev, 70% goals, expected goals for.
And fuck that pairing is good.
Yeah, Zadorov Gabranson, 63%. There's like, you can't, like, after today, you can't, unless there's injury or somebody needs a maintenance day, you can't really argue taking anybody out. So I think it is, like you said, he's going to get his chance eventually, right? Because again, when teams are winning, it's like, oh, this is, everything's great. We're never going to split anybody up ever. Yay. Like, he's going to get his chance. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to have a bad game. When he gets his chance, he needs to do what you just said with Shillington. Play in a way that you can't take him out.
And if you're – and this is why we say he's going through the grinder, right? Like, this is the way Daryl operates. If you do not – if you're going to bring C games or B games, you won't play. You need to mostly bring A games. Only then are you allowed to have some B games. Otherwise, you're not playing. And honestly, right where I sit right now, I don't have a fucking problem with it. I don't know if you do.
No, me neither.
Valimaki, your highest draft pick in the last how many years, is just sitting. I mean, his whole thing was, you know, he sat out for so long due to injury. Now that he's healthy, he says he's pissed off that he's sitting out. I don't have a problem with it.
I don't have a problem with it if Gabranson and Zadorov are playing decent, which they are. So, again, if Gabranson's out there being a liability, if this is Zadorov in the first few games of the season where he's terrible, giving the puck away, taking bad penalties, yeah, then I got a problem with it. But right now I don't, because you're getting the most out of those two guys.
Do you think that Dewar stays in line for the next game?
I don't know who we play in Philly. Philly next, they big.
Philly next, yeah.
You might want Pitlick back in. I don't know. I think he played. I think Pitlick probably gets back in, but I wouldn't bet money on it. Because Daryl, changing a lineup after you win, I don't know. But again, Philly is. Ottawa has like kind of like a closer to an AHL roster. Philly's pro.
I would say Dewar stays in for now, just because that's what I think Daryl operates, is he's not going to just bring you back in after sitting you out for one game and vice versa. He probably wants another look at Dewar.
And I mean, it probably depends if Pitlick's actually hurt, because they put out the notice that he was hurt, but Daryl said he wasn't hurt, so we'll see.
So you got Philadelphia next Tuesday night, and then you got Buffalo Thursday night. Islanders, and then Boston. Ooh, that's going
to
be
a tough back-to-back Boston and the Isles. Ooh.
Yeah, at the end of a road trip, that's going to be two tough games. But coming back to this game, Mangiapane opens the scoring, even though it's kind of Monahan, like we said. Lindholm tips one in. Everybody thought it was Rasmus Anderson, but it's Lindholm. I don't know how much he tips it. It might have went in.
I didn't think he tipped it at all, man. Like, I watched that like 400 times. I didn't see any tip. So,
well, they got all the angles. Whatever. I mean, the nicest goal was Chucky's, right? You get a power play goal.
Huge goal.
That was huge. Just like that was a nail in the coffin, right there. You have a team.
I just wanted to say the entries on the power play were. Johnny has that new entry where he's on right before they scored the goal, he set up Lindholm for like a mini breakaway there. That was sweet. I like that.
Well, you know, they're working on it. Daryl's not satisfied. So he's probably fucking cracking the whip with what's his nuts.
Old Kirk.
Kirk. Kirk. get the power play up to speed. But what are we now? Top 10 still? Probably just outside still.
In terms of percentage and quietly, Elias, man, Lindholm's been pretty good. But could Tkachuk have, did they say 5 power play goals?
Yeah, I think they were all power play goals.
Jeez most Louise.
Buddy most is, of his goals, yeah.
Buddy is owning the power play.
Lindholm, Mangiapane has 10 goals now. Brett Chesley wanted me to, in that tweet too, he did say, well, yeah, message me when he gets 20 goals.
TikTok.
He's going to score 20 goals this season. He might score 30.
Flames power play is currently 10th in percentage. So,
okay. Well, it's got to be at least top 10, right? You'd like to see it probably top 8. You're not getting, you're not beating Edmonton, that's for sure.
Jeez Louise, 41%. Drysdale had another, 15 goals this week?
Why does he have to be so good, too?
I don't get how he's so good, and they have McDavid. It's like, dude had like 7 goals this week in like 3 games.
He's going to be the first star of the week. He set up the game winner tonight. Fuck. Unbelievable. Fair. Nope. It's really not.
And then Zadorov with that beautiful rush, dude. And I love the shrug afterwards, man.
He's like, well,
sweet. I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Lucky goal. Yeah.
But a hell of a second period from the Flames. Like, the second period wins you that game. They were dynamite in the second.
Yeah. The first actually wasn't that. I wasn't too pleased with their first period. But yeah, second period, they turned it on big time. So Daryl Sutter post game. And I agree. I think this is a perfect way to sum it up. He says that was a gut check game because he emphasized how hard it is to play Montreal and Toronto, especially back-to-back nights. That game there against the Ottawa Senators, that is a must win.
It's a must win. And like we talked about off the top of this with our PTSD and, oh, do we suck again? That's a must win because last year they had this exact same game where it's like, hey, we need to beat Ottawa. We just lost
10 times.
We need to beat them. If we have to beat them, we should beat them. We need to beat them. And they come out and lay up and get creamed by Ottawa like 10-0.
Nine
times in a fucking row right after Jeff Ward has just said the season's turned around. So that's another reason why it's a must win. You've heard Sutter talk about like battle back points. This team wouldn't have done that last year. This is probably a game this team doesn't win last year.
I really don't think so. But even still, I thought they brought their B game outside. The second period was great. But even if your B game, you beat a beatable team 4-0. That's what you expect. Power play or penalty kill was great again tonight. Ottawa has 5.
It is a pleasure. I'm sorry. It's a pleasure to watch them kill penalties. It really is.
Yep. Ottawa has 5 power plays. Kill them off all in there. 5-on-3. Even when they go down 5-on-3, you're not even that worried.
No.
I mean, unless it's Edmonton or.
And I mean, I thought Vladar actually made some. I didn't think he made some really good saves in the first period, too. Like he makes that save on a partial. It wasn't a partial break, but he makes that nice backhand pad save like 2 minutes into the game. He was really good.
You outshoot Ottawa 33-27. Your power play goes 1-4. Every time the special teams is better, we win every game.
You win the special because, again, this team's going to always be money 5-on-5. You win the special teams battle, you win.
So it's great that he's honing in on this power play. He's emphasizing it. He's talking a lot about it in post-game pressers. It's going to be interesting tracking this power play. Interesting to see if they make any changes. I still want to see the one-time options. And too many times, it's like they moved around the horn when it finally gets to Monahan. He's like, what do I do?
Yeah,
like I got a guy on me.
They just like shove it to him in the bumper in the high slot. And what is he supposed to do? Like, I don't know what he's supposed to do.
He just passes it right back. Eh?
Yeah. It's like, thanks, Sean. Like, man, he's just like a decoy pile on there. Figure out what you do with Monahan on the power play. Jeez.
Why can't he be a trigger option?
I don't know. I don't understand why he can't be lower in the slot or something. So when that puck comes to whoever's because they love that high play. Then when it actually comes to him, he can bury it instead of being up by the blue line. I don't know what to do with him. I wish they could figure it out.
Just right now, you have Johnny who works the high boards, and then Chucky works the low boards, and they both try and make passes over to Lindholm. He's the trigger man. And then they dish up to Rask. And as soon as Rask gets you, like, just pass it back, please.
Pass it. Don't shoot it.
Don't shoot it when there's nobody in front of the net right into his glove. Please, just don't do it. Then Johnny gets it. I don't know. Monahan just fucking stands there useless. Like,
yeah, everybody's role is too one-dimensional. Because
it's not his fault. That's
exactly the role he's in. Because you know Johnny's trying to feed it. And if he does try to shoot, it's the 50 flex stick half slapper from 400 miles away that is not going in.
No, it's definitely not.
All that Lindholm's doing is catching passes on his strong side. You rarely see him one time it on the left wing boards. All Chucky does is, well, not all that he does, but he's kind of a wild card where sometimes he's the trigger man, but mostly he's just net front. Yeah, like you said, Anderson's blasting bombs from, not even bombs, what's the opposite of a bomb? Blasting softies from way downtown, and then poor Monahan just kind of skates around like he's like the Scotiabank skater out there. Like, he gets to play with the team.
Yeah, might as well give him a flag.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Rask is shooting duds.
Yeah,
he's blanks. He's blasting blanks.
Yeah,
he's blasting duds. He's got a good shot, snapshot from the top of the circles,
but not a good slapper.
No, probably the worst I've ever seen. Oh. Well, not the worst, but it gets my drift. So shot attempts 43-34 for the Flames. Scoring chances 18-10. High danger 5-4. Expected goals, you take the cake, 64 to their 35. Lindholm is your top game scorer, top performer, and then Oliver Shillington, Mangiapane. I just don't know, man. That power play just – I want to see Sean Monahan utilized. He can't do a one-timer. He one-timed it the other day, right?
Why? But I want to – yeah, he had a beautiful – that's – and it went in.
Like, why can't –
why can't he be there doing that?
He needs to, instead of standing where he's standing in coverage, he stands right in the middle of coverage. I mean, not his fault. That's where he's told to go. Why doesn't he come more into the high slot, off to the side a bit where Lindholm's lane is? Lindholm can shift down a bit, and then Johnny can try and feed either one of them. He can either go a little bit lower down to Lindholm, who can do the little slingshot shot, or if the lane's open to Sean, he can go high. Maybe he has a passing lane across the ice to Chucky. He can go across.
There needs to be, I don't know. Again, I don't know what the strategy is, but the strategy seems to be too one-dimensional. There should be options. Like, whenever a given player has the puck, there should be more than one option, and there never seems to be. It's like, okay, Gaudreau has it. You can see he's trying to go to Lindholm. That's the only way place it's going, and that's the only place it ends up. There needs to be, like, when you watch the Oilers power play, it's like a friggin' hurricane out there. I don't know what's going on. All I know is that it's going to end up, not even is going to end up in the back of the net, but whoever's shooting the puck is going to score the easiest goal they've ever scored because the net is so wide open because there's so much chaos. Like, I don't understand why they don't deploy like the McDavid strategy, where you'll see McDavid do this a lot. He'll have the puck on his strong side, on his left wing, and he'll just skate like back like he's going to exit the zone and then attack the net with the puck with speed. It's crazy. Opens all kinds of shit up.
The reason why they're so dangerous, because both their quarterbacks, they have two of them, are threats to shoot and to pass. Johnny Gaudreau, when he gets – I get it. He's your quarterback. He's your best playmaker. But when he's up high like that in the high slot, he's not shooting. Even if he does get the shot, like you said, he's too far away. He's good and tight. He's got the 50 flex. He's not a threat. If you had Chucky where he is, Chucky can be a threat, shoot or pass, or even Monahan. Monahan on the other side, he's like, as soon as Monahan gets the puck, he's got to start driving that like he's about to shoot. And then if he has a lane, take the shot, let the guys battle for it or dish it off. I don't know. Oilers are just fucking – plus they have the two best players in the world, so, I mean, that helps. But
although what we were talking was Chucky needs to take some sauce off those passes occasionally. Holy shit.
Especially when he does the back passes.
My Lord.
It's like typically the guy breaking out of the zone, it's not a bad play to go back to him, but you don't fucking rifle it at him.
Just whips it.
Just a whipper, eh? Fucking whippersnapper. All right, so you got Philly coming up and Buffalo. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe we do one after the 04. We'll see what happens. But what are you looking for to round up? You haven't done half your road trip yet. Are these guys just getting in the groove, or you think they're gas already? Like, where do you think things are at? What do you expect for Philly and Buffalo the upcoming games?
I don't know. I thought they looked tired against the Leafs, and rightly so, but I thought they looked fine tonight. So I kind of feel like they're just hitting a little bit of stride here again. They've gone 1-1-1 against, you know, you lose that one to Toronto. So I don't mind it. You do have four games this week, but at least you don't have any back-to-backs until you go to Boston. So you should be able to manage your rest okay in terms of a long-ass road trip. So,
well, you didn't have to expend much tonight, which is good.
Yeah, so I think they'll be fine. They keep playing like this, they'll be fine.
All right, final thought. You're 15 games in, you're 8-3-4. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel kind of, I'm still feeling fine, and I still feel where I think I thought I'd feel. Again, there's a good team who can't score many goals, so.
Yeah. I think where I'm at is I just got to keep reminding myself that there's a long game here.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond regular season. So he's getting these guys to play like they are now because of the playoffs, for the playoffs.
Right? And they're not spiraling out of control so far, right? Like you didn't let this get to four games. You didn't let this get like, hey, you didn't pick up any points. You still picked up points.
Yeah, the past two seasons you would have lost this game for sure.
The past two seasons you probably would have lost like four straight right now with no points accumulated.
Yeah.
So don't let it spiral.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is chisme ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.